wouldn't dream of manning the front desk at a youth hostel in your hometown. The same as you wouldn't dream of working as a fruit picker, or a brickies labourer, or washing dishes for a living. And yet, there's something about the travel experience that makes all of this seem like a really good idea. Travellers will do pretty much anything to live the dream overseas. Any job, no matter how menial or boring or occasionally bizarre. Maybe you'll find yourself doing a job you're grossly overqualified for. Maybe you'll find yourself doing a job that you actually have no idea how to properly perform. And maybe you'll find yourself doing a job that will change your proper career path or your life forever. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're talking about the weird and wonderful jobs that travellers find themselves doing when they're out on the road. We're talking about everything from cleaning rooms to picking fruit, from hefting bricks to stomping grapes. We're even talking about dressing up as a cowboy and tending a bar. And joining me to do that today, I have two travellers who have done some of the most unlikely and unsuitable jobs that you could possibly imagine. First, she's worked as a shuttle bus driver, a housekeeper, a tour guide, a travel agent, and even a masseuse, and is currently the customer relations manager at Intrepid Travel, Anne von Osterhausen. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Ben.
Thanks for coming along.
Thank you.
Also joining us, he's a former magazine editor who once lugged bricks for a living and turned down a job as a Greek financier, Guy Mozell.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Guy. Thanks for coming along. Now, Anne, is there any job that you haven't done since you left Germany? I'm going to read out a list of the things that you've done because you sent me an email.
Yeah.
And it's pretty incredible. So you've been a cook at a summer camp, a farmhand in northern Queensland, a shuttle bus driver, a cave guide, a kitchen hand, a housekeeper, a ski chalet host, a tour leader, an office assistant, a masseuse, a tour guide, a travel writer, a waitress, a chef, and a travel agent.
Sounds about right.
Does that pretty much
cover it? Wow.
That's incredible.
Yeah, well, you have to do your things when you go travelling, and if you want to keep travelling,
yeah,
you just
do what you have to do.
Yeah, what you want to do as well.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, were there any of those that you actually thought you would do before you left home?
No, I had no idea. I mean, I had no idea that I would be in a shed in a banana farm or fixing pipes and
right.
nearly being run over by snakes and spiders and everything.
Yeah, welcome to Australia.
Yeah.
Guy, what is it about travel that makes people sort of take on these jobs that they wouldn't normally do at home?
I think there's a sense of kind of unreality when you're traveling in some respects. It's like it's a pause from your real life. The real life is the 9-to-5 and, you know.
Yeah.
The drudgery of
existence. Where you actually have to explain to friends and family what you do for a living.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and there are consequences. You know, there are real consequences to your real life. But I think when you're traveling, there's a sense of, well, even if I screw this up, it doesn't matter because I'll just do the next thing, or I'll just go to a different country.
Does it kind of embolden you to do things that you really shouldn't be doing?
Yeah, I think so. I think it opens your eyes to possibilities as well. Like it makes you think that, you know, you may not have to do the 9-to-5. You mean, there are other jobs out there that people do that can earn a living, even though some of the jobs might be terrible or exhausting.
Yeah.
There's other things out there for you.
I guess it lets you experiment a little bit and try things that you wouldn't at home and see how it fits.
Yeah, I think it's that sense of freedom and kind of anything goes and give it a shot. Worst thing happens, you screw it up, you just go to the next country and forget about it and leave your troubles behind you.
Yeah. I was working a job in Scotland as a cook, and a friend of mine said to me, oh, how's it going? You know, are you working hard? And I said to him, I'm doing enough not to get fired. And he just thought that was the funniest thing he'd ever heard. He was like, that's the most Australian thing I think you've ever seen. I was like, that's not actually true. Australians are hard workers. But I think that's part of when you're traveling. You don't really care that much about your job sometimes. Mm. You just do enough to hold on to a paycheck and that's about it.
Mm.
And did you feel like you were really unsuitable to any of those jobs that you've done?
Unsuitable, I don't know. Because what Guy just said is where, like, you can kind of choose whatever you want to do, and like you do things that you would never do at home. Like when I was at home, I would have never thought I'm going to clean toilets in a hotel or something.
Right.
But then when you travel, you feel like, I can get my hands dirty. I can like get the job done if I have to.
Yeah.
And I think, so cleaning toilets is, but it's not unsuitable because you have to do
right.
it in your
yeah.
life.
Mm.
Or, I mean.
And someone has to do those jobs, right?
Exactly.
Someone's doing them. You know, so why not you? If you need the job and you got to fund the next adventure.
Yeah.
Backpackers.
Yeah.
That's who's doing
that's
those
right.
jobs.
Exactly, yeah.
Did you guys find that you met amazing people that you're sort of still in contact with through these weird jobs?
No. No, they're all horrible. Right. I'm glad to leave them behind. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I did. Although it was weird. Some of these jobs I've actually forgotten that I did. Like, they were kind of
so... You have to erase them from your memory.
That's right. Like I was going through some old boxes of stuff at my parents' house the other day in Brisbane, and mum's kept everything. And there was a leaving card signed by a bunch of people. And I don't know who these people are. I've had a job somewhere.
What was the job?
I don't know, because it was just a leaving card, and it said, right. Hey, all the best.
I mean, they could have specified.
Good luck.
You were the best lawyer we've ever had.
You were the best at this specific thing we've been doing for the past 2 months.
How about you, Anne? You must have met loads of people.
Yeah, I've met loads of people, and I think it's not necessarily the working, but like where you work that you meet like amazing people. So, for example, I was in Margaret River doing the vineyard thing, pruning and wire lifting and everything you need to do to get yourself through. And I met a girl there, and she was from Brazil, and she had worked in the snow season in Australia. And I thought, oh my God, like I've never really known that there's snow in Australia. And then I was thinking between like, should I go and work on the pearl farms in WA, or should I do something different? It's like, why not go to the snow in Australia? And so because of her, I went to the snow, and then I was in the snow and I met someone else. And that person told me that he's been on an amazing trip overlanding from London to Sydney.
Right.
So then I afterwards looked up and on their website, and then I was found that they're looking for tour guides. And then I applied for the job and was the tour guide for the bus trip from London to Sydney. So yeah,
right. It just rolls on.
You need loads of people, and they inspire you to do different things, and you see so many different opportunities of things you can do and places you can go to.
Yeah, that's cool. The first ever job that I did overseas was working as a farmhand in Scotland.
Yeah,
in this tiny little village, you know, up in the north of Scotland, and I met these four guys who were just happened to be around my age and who lived there. These Scottish guys, and I'm still friends with them. They came to stay with me in Australia for a while, and I ended up, one of them ended up sort of starting this bar empire basically in Edinburgh, and I moved back to Edinburgh for a little while, and I got a job working in the kitchen of one of his bars, and I worked there for about 3 months or so, and it was amazing because cool. At that point I didn't have a social security number, national security number, in the UK, and so it was really difficult to get a job. And so I went and worked in his kitchen on the roster as his wife, Wendy. So when I was checking the roster, I always had to look for Wendy's shifts. And everyone in there called me Wendy. And I still get Facebook messages from people saying, hey, Wendy, what's happening? But, you know, we made it work. It was just one of those sort of fortuitous things in my first ever job in this tiny little town in the middle of nowhere that spurred, as the same as it did with you, and to meet lots of people and have these amazing experiences.
I think when I left to go travelling when I was 21 or whatever it was, that was 20 years ago. Oh, wow. Terrifying. I think I had this idea that I would go from job to job and use that as the travel. But in the end, what I ended up doing, I think this is what a lot of people do as well, is they kind of, like I had, like I was an accountant back in the bad old days, and you could get relatively easy sort of contract accounting work in London. So I would do like a 6 month stint in London, cash up with as much cash as I could live as cheaply as I could, and then use that to then go off and do an adventure for 3 months or something, and then come back and crash on a mate's couch for a few weeks, find another job, cash up again, and go traveling again. So I kind of used London as a base because I had a valuable skill, and I kind of used that and then just did sort of short hops.
Yeah.
In retrospect, I think doing it the way you did, and Ben to an extent, I think it's kind of more fun, you know?
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you guys, like, do you kind of feel when you're working these jobs, do you feel like you're still traveling, or do you feel like you would at home just working a job?
Yeah, I think when you work on a farm doing fruit picking or like anything, then feels a bit unreal, and you have to explain it to your parents to explain this is what I'm doing. I think then you definitely feel like you're still traveling.
Yeah.
But if you would do something like accounting or something, maybe then it's more like a different experience where you're like living somewhere. And
did you get that rush of travel when you're an accountant in London? I feel like I've answered the question already.
Every day, man. It's like, you know, we're like rock stars, you know, all the groupies and stuff. You're right. I guess you do kind of fall into that, particularly when you're doing like a contract for 6 months or something and you're catching the tube into the city every day. You know, that's pretty... you know, you do feel like you're just another one of the, you know, soulless herd.
I worked at a ski resort as a cook, and I kind of had these pictures in my mind that I would be, you know, going out snowboarding every day. I'd work 4 or 5 hours, and then I'd snowboard every afternoon, and I'd be this killer snowboarder by the time I got home.
Yeah.
But actually, I was working like 5 days a week of solid hours, so that, you know, that my whole day was gone being in the kitchen. Mm. And then I'd have 2 days off, and one of those days I would have to spend taking care of, you know, menial sort of jobs and chores and shopping and things, and then I get 1 day basically to go out on the snow. It was nowhere near the kind of holiday experience that I thought it would be.
I think though the good thing about having a skill like being an accountant is you don't really have to worry about it too much, because you know I always get a job. And like with doing these odd jobs than I sometimes did, and if you don't have like the skill, then you're always like a little bit worried, like what's gonna happen next year and what if I don't find a job. And then in the beginning, like when I came to Australia, for example, to start my travels around Australia, it does take maybe like sometimes a few weeks or months to like get settled, whereas if you have like the skill, it's very easy to earn quite good money, I guess.
Although you had this amazing transferable skill and ended up becoming a labourer.
I did, yeah. So when I came across to the UK, I think I'd saved a grand total of about $4,000.
Right.
This was back in the day when I think it was like 35p roughly per dollar. It was like a third, like in pounds.
Yeah, right.
So,
and you were thinking your $4,000 would last.
And I'm thinking I got $4,000, man. Yeah. I'm fine, you know. Yeah. And then, you know, within a couple of weeks, that's right. And then a couple of weeks, I was royally screwed. And I thought I'd get a job pretty quickly, but I got there kind of towards the end of the year, like November, December.
Right.
So no one's hiring, no one's, you know, there's no new contracts around. So I found myself actually, for the first time that I could recall, having to find a job to survive.
Right.
You know, which is kind of different, right? Like you go from your sort of cloistered, you know, family life back in Australia where, you know, if you screw up, it's fine because you just got a home, mum and dad and everything else. It was all fine. But here I was on my own. I'd throw myself out there, and I actually realized that I had no money left, and I was living off Snickers bars because I think they're about.
That's not the worst.
I think no. Well, I decided because they're about 30p, so it's pretty cheap.
Yeah,
and they were full of
a dollar,
but they were full of, like, you know, they had enough sugar and crap in it to sort of keep me going. So I used to have a few of those a day to keep me going when
much healthier than a Mars bar because you've got the nuts in there.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's properly healthy. So I had to get a job, and I had a mate who worked at a recruitment agency, but yeah, just for kind of labouring and gigs. So I ended up working for about a week as a labourer on a building site in early December in the city of London.
Brutal.
And you'd be on site at like 7, it's still dark, and it's zero or just under zero. And you're having to lug sort of wheelbarrows full of bricks from point A to point B over. Yeah, so that was actually, and I've got to say, all the jobs that I've had while traveling, and I haven't had that many, were the ones that were outside of my career skill set, if you like.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that were kind of more interesting or more. Yeah.
They're good ways of teaching you things that you don't want to do as a future career.
Yeah, well,
I certainly found that about farm work.
Yeah.
I was not cut out to be a farm worker.
Yeah, that's right. Deal. But I think, I mean, traveling as in general gives you a better sense of perspective of your own place in the world and how other people live. And I think working in jobs that some people do their entire lives that you aren't cut out for, or that you don't have to work because you're more fortunate or you have a more transferable skill, that's really important too.
Great to have that experience,
And I think as well, because we have to go out of our comfort zones anyway when we go traveling, but if you're at a stage where you have to eat Snickers bars every day, and then I always find something, and if you're not too good to like not get your hands dirty, then you know, I can work on a building site if that's the only job that I do, or I can clean toilets, or can work on a banana farm or something. Yeah.
So, guys, obviously some of the jobs we've done have been fairly interesting, but there are also some pretty bizarre jobs out there as well. So I thought we'd talk to someone who's done one of those, Sam Sutherland. Hey, Sam, how are you?
Hey, not too bad, thanks.
Well, okay, so let's go way back. So you left school in the UK, and rather than do the normal thing of coming to Australia, you decided to go and work in Europe. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. So I finished school at 18 years old, wasn't interested in going to university at that time. So I took a job, first of all, locally in what was a regular bookstore, and then decided to go online to be like Amazon and try and compete with them. And they hired me straight out of school because I'd done business and computers at school, so they thought I could write their website and run their books. And that didn't really work out. So I lasted about a month there, and they were kind of like, this isn't working. I was like, yeah, I kind of agree. So I left, but they gave me like a month's wages. So with that, I went on holiday, and I went to Ibiza and had a great time. And I was like, yeah, I want to do this. I want to come and work out here. But it was the end of the season, so there were no jobs and nothing was happening. So I came back home, and then I was looking for jobs online. And my dad gave me a call, and he was like, you know how you want to go and work abroad? I was like, yeah. He's like, well, I've seen this job at Euro Disney. And I was like, okay. So once I finished laughing, he was like, no, seriously. If you're interested, they're doing interviews tomorrow. Here's a phone number to call. So I was like, yeah, you know, whatever. It's interview practice, if nothing else. So yeah. I called up and took the train to York the next day. And arrived at this place, and there are about 20 people sitting in there. And so I walked in, and the lady from Euro Disney was like, bonjour. And I was like, oh, I hadn't thought this would be quite so French. So we sat down, and they showed us a video of what sort of the job would be like and life would be like there, which was all in French. And I understood sort of 10% of it with my school GCSE grade C French. And then we went in for the interviews, and went in two at a time. And I went in with this guy who was like, he was English, and he spoke fluent Spanish and German and French. And they started chatting away in French, and I was like, oh my God, I am nowhere near this level of language. So I could just kind of sat back and went, whatever. And then she sent this guy off and was like, oh, we'll let you know. And it sounded like he hadn't got it. And I was like, well, if he hasn't got it, I haven't got any chance. So I just kind of sat back and relaxed and just had a chat with this woman. And she was like, look, obviously the language skills aren't there, but you've got the right attitude, and you're the kind of person that we're looking for. So when can you start? And I was just like, oh.
So had you applied for a specific position, or was it just to go and work at Euro Disney?
No, it was just to go and work there. When we got there, you could sort of choose what you wanted from a list of jobs, and I just chose the one that had the least amount of French, which was parking attendant.
Right.
So it would have been stood in a car park sort of waving cars around, and she said, look, this is rubbish, you don't want to do that job. But I do have a job where you don't need quite so much French, you'll pick it up as you go along, but it's really fun, it's really interesting. I was like, yeah, okay, so yeah, let's do that. So she said, yeah, you're going to be a cowboy slash waiter in Buffalo Bill's Wild West show.
So you had to wait tables dressed as a cowboy?
Yes, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Right, and so were you living in Paris at the time?
Well, it's about 40 kilometres outside of Paris, and Disney put you up in... shared accommodation kind of thing, sort of like university hall. So I was sharing with a guy from Northern Ireland who worked on the ticket office.
Was it good fun?
It was. It was awesome. Yeah, so much fun.
Did it feel like a travel experience? Like, did you feel like you were in France, or could you have been doing it anywhere, really?
Yeah, that could have been any. Well, it was Disney with a French twist, so there was still some parts of it were very French, and some of the attitudes of the people that were there were very French still. But I did have 2 days off a week, so I'd go into the centre of Paris and wander around, go and watch French films on the Champs-Élysées and do some very French stuff while I was there. So, yeah, it wasn't all singing and dancing. Yeah.
So you're glad you did it?
Yeah, absolutely. It was really good for me personally to sort of completely move away from everything that I knew and into an environment such as that, where it's so diverse and there's so many different people from so many different places that there is no sort of normal there. So it's a really good environment where you can just be yourself. And at that time of sort of turning 18, growing up, it was a really good place to find actually who I was for a couple of years. So yeah, it's sort of made me who I am now.
podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel, the global leaders in responsible travel. Did you know that when travelling and working abroad, short-term volunteering isn't always helpful and can place children and communities at risk? But there are definitely ways you can support local economies and the well-being of people who live there. Learn more about responsible travel and how you can do your bit at intrepidtravel.com. So, Anne, I guess you're a qualified cook, is that right?
No.
You're not qualified at all. But you've worked as a chef.
Yeah, yeah.
Me too. Yeah. But is that one of those skills, though, that's good because it's so easily transferable and it's something that you can do in any country that you land in?
Yeah, I think so. So, I mean, when you get to a new place, for example, like all the hospitality jobs, they would be the ones easiest to find, I think. So you just either like.
Yeah, because I guess when people are going overseas for their first time, yeah, they haven't got a clue what sort of things they can do.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, you either just like print out, oh, that's what we used to do, print out a whole bunch of CVs and like walk from shop to shop and ask if they need a kitchen hand or something. Or, like, in the hostels, they would have the blackboards as well. And that's usually where I used to find the jobs. Or then there's someone there that you meet and they know someone and they know someone.
Right.
And they can hook you up with someone who.
My English cousin once wandered around Bondi with her CV, handing them out with no shoes on. And she went to the store and said, I want to work here. The guy's like, why aren't you wearing any shoes? She's like, 'cause it's Australia. You guys don't wear shoes. Yeah, we actually do. So. So, Guy, I guess people, you know, they land in this new place for the first time and they have no idea what they're going to do to make money. What are the steps that they can take?
Yeah, I guess in my experience, so I left London after a couple of years of working and travelling back and forth because I got a bit sick of it. I moved to Glasgow just because it was there. And it wasn't Edinburgh.
And it wasn't London.
And it wasn't Edinburgh, where right. all the other Aussies go if they're not going to London. So I go to Glasgow where it's slightly terrifying and I don't know anybody. I was sick of accounting. I hated it and I've obviously not won any more partly because it was terrible. So I decided when I went there that I wasn't going to just get another accounting job and I was just going to get anything I could.
Yeah.
I literally printed out some CVs and went knocking on doors of recruitment agencies. So they have different, over particularly in the UK, and I'm sure it's not just a UK phenomenon. And so, I just kind of just did what a lot of people who are looking for work in anywhere do. I just shot out a bunch of CVs and crossed my fingers and had a few interviews and ended up getting a job at a call centre for British Telecom in Glasgow.
And what about you? Did you find that it's easier to go for the sort of menial jobs that other people might not want to do, or did you just identify things that you really wanted to do and get qualified?
I think sometimes when you start off, then it was easier to just take whatever you could find.
Like, so I'm sure people weren't lining up for the banana farm.
Well, don't know. Like, there was quite a lot of people there.
Oh, was there? Okay, yeah. There you go.
No, so when I got to Australia, I worked in a hostel. So I think that's like a very usual thing.
Yeah.
And I did it in New Zealand as well. So you clean for free accommodation. Mm-hmm. And I also ran the shuttle bus from the hostel to the swimming pool and to the bus stop. And then once you don't have to pay for your accommodation, then you have like a little bit more time and then you can either look on the blackboards or like hand out your CVs, or here in Australia you can go on Seek, and like quite a lot of people do that as well, especially when you have some skills. Then there's like Gumtree as well.
Yeah.
I think that's in the UK as
it
well.
Is. Definitely.
Yeah, so that's where a lot of people find
jobs. Can I ask, do they tailor, like does Seek, for example, have a specific kind of tailored area or a thing for backpackers or for travellers? Is it just kind of...
Yeah, but you could look for contract work or hospitality or something.
Yeah,
and then there's recruiters here as well that are specialised on certain areas as well.
Yeah.
You also got yourself skills. Like you trained to become a masseuse so that you could come back to Australia and be a Thai masseuse, right?
Kind of, yeah. So I was working in the Snowy Mountains and I was running this bed and breakfast together with an elderly couple and they were so entrepreneurial and they always said, like, you can do whatever you want and like, just do it. And they had a apartment complex in Phuket.
Yeah.
And so they said, like, come with us, stay with us, and learn Thai massage, and then you can do it anywhere in the world. So that's what I did.
Wow. How long did it take you to learn?
Just, like, a couple of weeks. Okay. And, yeah, you could go back as much as you want and, like, learn more.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and then I tried it back here in Australia, and it was quite interesting experience.
I think the best advice for travellers looking to find a good set of skills, everyone should just become a travel writer.
Yeah,
because then you travelling is your job, which is
on the travel side.
Sorry, man.
There's too much competition already. Yeah. And are there any jobs that you've actually turned down? Was there anything you wouldn't do?
Yeah, so traveling in hostels is the life of the party, and the hostel that I started traveling and working in Brisbane, I'm not going to say the name, okay. They have a bar, and the bar is really popular for wet t-shirt competitions with everyone.
I literally know the bar you're talking about.
Not because you ever went.
I think it's still there. Hey. I was there like years ago, and I went back there a couple of years ago, and I was still there. And yeah, I wasn't really into them.
Yeah, right.
And then,
so they asked you to do that then? And you?
No, they didn't ask me to. Like, everyone else was like, yeah, let's do it. They loved it. And it's like, no, I'm not into that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and then I was giving a massage to this guy, and as it turned out, I was massaging him in his studio. He was an artist, mm-hmm. and he was specialized in female nude portraits, which I only found out when I walked into it, and it was covered in portraits. And so I was massaging, and he's like, "You've got a really beautiful smile. Would you mind if I portray you?" And I said, "I have to ask my boyfriend first." Yeah, yeah, he said no.
But if it's my smile you're after, I'll keep my clothes on, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
Nothing suspect at all.
I know,
that.
Yeah. But yeah, no.
So, guys, to get a slightly different perspective, we're now going to chat to a couple who quit their jobs a couple of years ago to go and travel and have ended up making this whole thing their career. Chanel Cartel and Steve O'Dernberger. How you doing, guys?
Good.
Hey, how's it going?
Thanks for having
us. Yeah, really well. Thanks a lot for coming along. Now tell me about this whole process you've been through. You quit decent jobs and decided to go traveling?
Yes. Wow. So that feels like a lifetime ago, although it was only 2.5 years ago that we left originally. We were both in the advertising industry, living in Johannesburg, South Africa originally.
Mm-hmm.
And, we were both living very comfortable lives. We had a pretty apartment in a good neighborhood. We both had cars, you know, we had all the pretty stuff that you're supposed to have in this day and age. We were both, as I said, working in advertising. I was a creative director. Steve was an art director. And I think, you know, we reached, I think, age 28, 29, and we were like, well, is this it? Is this our life for the next 30, 40 years? And we kind of said, well, no, we need to shake things up a bit. We're tired of this routine. It's not getting us creatively. I guess we're not expressing ourselves as creatively as we could. So, and I was always kind of hinting at it. I was kind of saying, let's travel, Steve, let's travel. And he was like, I don't know.
Chanel was whispering in my ear when I was sleeping. That kind of stuff.
Right.
And it obviously worked out because one day I was like, wow, we should really, really do this.
Yeah. I mean, we went to a talk. I'll say it very quickly, but we went to a conference down in Cape Town called Design Indaba, and they had a guy by the name of Stefan Sagmeister talk about the power of time off and how for a creative person, it's actually really important to get away from what you do every day and take time off to work on personal passion projects. And I think that kind of really spoke to us, and that I think kind of reminded, or it hinted at Steve to say, you know, maybe your career doesn't have to be over by traveling, because I think that was fear.
Yeah, you have these stigmas, these stereotypes of what you should be doing and how you should get there, and that kind of flipped it all on its head.
Yeah,
and
so originally, I mean, we were just going to take a year off, just a sabbatical, literally time off to, you know, illustrate and photograph and just do fun projects that we've always wanted to do.
And you dived straight into some pretty interesting jobs once you started traveling, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a good way for us to kind of see the world and do it on a budget. So volunteering for us was a no-brainer from straight from the word go.
Yeah.
And yeah, we did some really memorable and some forgettable stuff. But
right. So what sort of things are we talking?
We went straight up to Alta at the top of Norway. That was our first stop. And we worked in a husky lodge there with over 70 huskies. We were in charge of looking after the puppies, which is the world's toughest
That's
job.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So these little...
Did you have any experience with dogs before?
No. I mean, I've had...
We both had dogs growing up.
No, like, you can call it working professional experience.
Well, I mean, funny enough, I've got a fun little story here. How I actually got into photography about a year before we actually left was taking photographs of dogs. We would go, because we both couldn't have dogs at the time because we were living in an apartment, but we loved dogs, so we would go every Sunday to the park and take photos of dogs, and that's kind of we got into a joint Instagram account and everything in the beginning. But sorry,
so obviously we had that passion and we decided huskies sounded really cool, and the lodge was incredible.
It does sound cool.
It was just a wooden cabin in the middle of the forest at the top of Norway, and it was it was their summertime, so they're obviously 3 months of pure sunshine. So the sun didn't go down, which is also crazy. You'd wake up at 2 in the morning and you'd be like, what is going on?
You'd sometimes go to bed at 2 in the morning.
Go to bed at 2 in the morning, and most of the Norwegians would still be working outside. We'd be like, what is going on here? And like they just stayed up for ages. So
and where did you move on to from there?
After Norway, after working with the dogs, we moved on to Sweden. And Sweden was a little more interesting. I mean, the gig that we got there said we would be helping with tourists. I mean, it is quite vague, I guess, to begin with. So we should
not quite as cute as huskies.
Exactly. But the location looked really good.
Yes, the location looked amazing, and helping with tourists, we were like, oh, we can do that, you know, whatever that is. And it ended up that we would be the cleaning staff. So we were looking after this campsite's lodge. They had, I think, 6 rooms. So we had to do all the laundry. We had to clean the bathroom, scrub the toilet. So it was a very interesting time.
We wanted to get totally out of our comfort zone, and that was totally out of our comfort zone. We also we did a digital detox that month, so we were off the internet, so we had no connection with friends. It was
An
interesting month in the middle of Sweden, and it rained pretty much every day.
So what are you doing now? It sounds like it's a combination of a whole lot of different things to sort of keep the travel dream alive.
Yes, absolutely. I think we're getting more towards the work that we were doing back home, just slightly different. So we're doing a lot of creative work. We're working with a lot of brands. We do, you know, try to do the odd bit of volunteer work every now and then. So it's a happy medium to keep us traveling for cheaper and for longer. And it's totally working for us right now.
Yeah, and I mean, the kind of work we're doing, I mean, we've built up a pretty good community on our Instagram page. So we're doing a lot of sponsored work. We're also getting into a lot of freelance filmmaking and photography. So we've spun it around, and it's a great balance, like Steve said.
Yeah, right. And this is all stuff that you guys can do sort of location independent, right?
100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Now, how can people find you if they want to read more about your story?
They can find us on Instagram. That's probably the best one, is at How Far From Home. We've also got our blog, howfarfromhome.com. And yeah, and if they actually want to learn to do what we're doing, because we put together, the beginning of this year, we spent about 9 months filming and conceptualizing an online course to try and teach people how to do what we do. So that can also be found on our site, howfarfromhome.com/learn.
Okay, awesome. Well, Chanel and Steve-O, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Anne and Guy, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks,
Ben. If you'd like to read any more travel stories from me or a lot of our other guests on Flight of Fancy, you can find them on traveller.com.au. And we'll see you next time on Flight of Fancy.